before we get started, I'm going to need your help, okay? So I'm going to count to three, and I want everybody to cheer. That way, if there's any stragglers trying to figure out what to do at this time, they'll know that this is an exciting panel. So you ready, guys? One, two, three.
People out there were ready to come in and got scared off and they ran.
Okay, one more time.
A rave was going on.
Two, three. Woo! Oh, I think they're looking. Okay, thanks for that.
Alrighty.
So I'd like to introduce George Perez. I'm sure most of you that are here know all about him, but I'd just like to take a few minutes to introduce him.
Reaction already.
George is a prolific artist and writer with credits that include acclaimed runs on The Avengers, Crisis on Infinite Earths, Fantastic Four, Justice League of America, New Teen Titans, Superman, The Infinity Gauntlet, and Wonder Woman. Mm. He's probably the only artist to have drawn every single character in the Marvel and DC universes.
I think John Byrne probably did a good run for my money as well.
The best introduction I could give him is actually to borrow from the words of his friend Marv Wolfman from his introduction in Modern Masters. The artist George Perez has continued to grow over the years when many other artists of his generation have become stagnant. His art is fresh and fun because George loves what he does. That comes from the person George, who, like the characters he draws, is bigger than life.
That was before my diet.
So let's just start with some easy questions. Did you have any favorite comics growing up?
Pretty much everything. I mean, I started off, you know, with the standards. I think my very first comic was an issue of Detective Comics, one of the, you know, the era where Batman and Robin were always facing some alien character. You know, very cartoon. I think Batmite might have been around in that, during those days too. And then, you know, read the Superman comic. You know, Justice League of America. And, a few scattered titles here and there, Green Lantern and the like. And then discovered Marvel when I picked up an issue of Fantastic Four, the introduction of the character Diablo, of which Roy Thomas said that it was amazing because that was one of the worst-selling issues of Fantastic Four at the time. But that happened to be the first one I picked up and saw, you know, this, the art of Jack Kirby, of course, not knowing who any of the artists were by name. And just seeing this, you know, very, very dynamic, crude, but very electric style, and then started reading a lot of the Marvel titles very, very religiously. I was reading both Marvel and DC pretty regularly. Legion of Superheroes was one of my favorite titles over at DC. Fantastic Four, The Avengers, and almost anything Marvel was doing, because at the time you could actually buy the entire Marvel line, because they only had, you know, about a dozen titles. I even bought Sergeant Fury and Howling Commandos. Just to be, I didn't buy the Western stuff. That's probably one thing I didn't get. But you know, I was mesmerized by it, and comics taught me how to read English, since I came from a Spanish-speaking household, and started doodling, trying to copy the characters when I was between 4 and 5 years old, and basically I've been doing that ever since. Now I'll be turning 58 this year, so that's a lot of time doodling. I'm having a grand time. So basically, I haven't grown up. I've been doing the same thing I've been doing as a five-year-old child now for 53 years, you know?
So of those comics, did you have any particular influences in terms of the art?
Well, Kurt Swan was my first, because again, you know, I described him as later on, obviously, like the Norman Rockwell of comics. His characters were very serene. Even Superman, with a lot of power, tended to be very human-looking. And Jack Kirby was more closer like a Salvador Dali of comics, where he was, you know, much more kinetic. The characters weren't meant to look real. They were meant to look exciting, a reality of his own. And there were those I just admired. I mean, as I got older, when I got to a point where I really wanted to really draw comics, then I became more aware of them. John Buscema, Gil Kane. I couldn't believe how Gil Kane could be so graceful in his figure work, particularly once he started inking himself and started seeing pure Gil Kane. And John Buscema, because he was like Neil Adams over at DC, but he was like cross between Jack Kirby and Neil Adams. He had the best of both. The realism of Adams with the raw, hard-edged energy of Jack Kirby. And, of course, so many other artists. Barry Windsor-Smith, after he went through his Kirby period, had this real ornate style with all the extra detail. Ah, detail. that I started to gravitate to, because to me that proved that you can be more illustrative, even though you are doing basically cartoons, that you can add a sense of design, a sense of a finished polish that made it more illustrative than just clean line work. In fact, one of the great things of having been in the industry as long as I have is being able to now have the industry's technology catch up to me, because I did so much detail. A lot of the stuff kept disappearing or shaking up in the printing of the old comics. Now, my stuff, you can actually see every line. Everything comes in crystal clear. So I'm glad the technology caught up that actually can print the stuff that I do. So when I see my stuff printed, some of the older stuff reprinted on better quality paper with better press, if they have good original plates, to see, oh my God, there's what my work should have looked like years ago. But again, I drew for the satisfaction of drawing that way. So even though I knew a lot of it wasn't going to be printed, I enjoyed drawing it.
You got your start with Marvel in the 1970s. What was it like working with Marvel at the time? Was it a bit of a rebirth time for Marvel? The Silver Age had kind of waned a little. Jack Kirby had left. You had people like Marv Wolfman coming in, Tomb of Dracula, Conan. It was a pretty vibrant time.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was still a lot of energy because of so many young people were now working in the industry. But it was also a time when comics were starting to get a little moribund, and they were doing a lot of cost-cutting measures. When I started doing comics, the comics had gone down to 17 pages per feature. And two of those pages were actually, in order to save money, the center bold of all the comics, which at the time still had regular comic stuff in there as opposed to ads, they would have us take a standard vertical-oriented page, turn it on its side, and draw both pages on one page. So they're paying you... they're only paying you for one page, even though you're drawing, and they're printing too. Again, another cost-saving measure. But then I was just starting industry. For me, that was just standard operating procedure. It was already in place at the time I did it. So if you look at some of those old comics that have those double pagers, you'll notice that the ink line might be a little thicker since it didn't have the reduction that the other pages had. It was a time that the industry was at a point where you wondered if they were going to succeed. Then certain titles started, taking the industry by storm. Most especially X-Men over at Marvel, which suddenly started, getting a fan following. As fandom started getting more and more nurtured, and the attention was being paid more to sales based on what the fans liked. That became something that was noticed. Where there suddenly a star system was being established. John Byrne became a major star because of and Chris Claremont because of the X-Men. And DC was still floundering at the time, and I'm very proud that Marv Wolfman and I did the same thing for DC with the Teen Titans. At that point, there was rumor that DC was going to be selling off their characters to other companies or publishers because really they were hemorrhaging on their books. And Titans gave DC the respectability against Marvel's numbers, because Jim Shooter, when he took over Marvel, did a lot of stuff that helped in the promoting. He did what Stan Lee started doing. Made friends with the fan market, tried to nurture that, and the Marvel titles were really, really zooming up as the DC titles were kind of leveling off and some of them falling precipitously until the Titans came in, and then of course that led to Ronin, that led to Dark Knight, all the things that then put DC back on the map. But when I came in, because I just wanted to draw comics, and we didn't care that the industry was not doing well, because there was no royalties. I mean, how the books sold didn't matter. I got paid the same thing per page, drawing the Avengers with a lot of characters, and if I would draw Iron Man with just a single character. And that's what made me valuable to the industry, because I was willing to draw the team books at a time when there was no real money to be made by drawing the team books. It wasn't until the Titans were almost a year old when the royalty system started in the mainstream, the Titans were the first mainstream title to earn royalties, that it became profitable to do books like the Teen Titans. But again, I had already established myself as a team book artist, so of course I did it for the love of it. Now I was being rewarded for it, so I was very grateful for that.
So speaking of the new Teen Titans, could you go over how that came about? It seemed like an interesting idea, being the sidekick book, and again how you kind of grew them up.
Well, the thing is, I when I was offered the Teen Titans, I didn't want to draw the Teen Titans. To me, they were the Justice Little League. The only reason I, at that point, things were starting to get a little rocky editorially over at Marvel. So I just wanted to, try my hand at working at DC. And my target, my goal at working at DC was to do the Justice League. For the same reason that when I first went to Marvel, my goal was to draw the Avengers. I wanted to draw all the characters that I grew up with and draw them all in one book so I could actually draw them. And when I was offered, I was approached by Marv Wolfman saying that they were going to relaunch the Teen Titans. Now, the Teen Titans I grew up with during the 1960s, loved it. I loved the work of Nick Carty. I loved the stories by Bob Haney, which they're ridiculous now, but they were, I was a growing kid at the time. But the art by Nick Carty, by Gil Kane, or usually inked by Nick Carty, I fell in love with. But then the Titans had a second wave, which I didn't particularly care for. And as it turned out, Jeanette Kahn, the then publisher of DC Comics, was kind of ashamed of. Even though the sales of that book were okay, she canceled it. She was ashamed of those Titans. So the idea of a new Teen Titans book was something that Marv and Len Wein had to kind of fight for. And the only reason they finally got a green light on it was when they attached me to the title. But again, I was doing it only if they could give me a chance to do the Justice League of America, should Dick Dillon ever go on vacation, since at that point, Justice League only had two artists in his entire run. And Dick Dillon never missed an issue. Unfortunately, like a month after I said that, Dick Dillon passed away. And I had my chance to do the Justice League. I was going to be the replacement artist in Justice League, but then I'll do the Teen Titans book as well. And the Teen Titans I fell in love with, and the Justice League is a book I ended up dropping, because the Teen Titans, who everyone predicted, including me, would not last six issues, ended up becoming DC's breakout hit. And when Marv asked me to start plotting the book with him, because he saw I was doing some restructuring of the plot as I've drawn, because that's the way I usually work, he wanted to get my input as he's doing the stories, and I was A Day in the Life, issue 8 of the Teen Titans, which showed the Titans in their private lives, became the first issue that I was actually listed as co-plotter. And from that point on, this was the first title since I started in the industry that as the Inhumans was a number one issue that I had done. The same thing with Logan's Run. But Logan's Run was an adaptation. The Inhumans already had a history. The Titans had characters that were created by Marv Wolfman and me. It was my first title that its success was definitely going to be pinned on my contribution to it. And, of course, the rest is history. I stayed on that book for quite a run there. To date, it's still the longest run I ever had. Issue 6 was the only issue I missed because I was vacationing at the time and Kurt Swan filled in for me. But that I stayed on the book up until the 50s without missing an issue. A record I couldn't match now. The closest I came was my relaunch of The Avengers with Kurt Busiek. But I'm still obviously asked about the Teen Titans. When those characters are among the most requested sketch characters. And of course, returning to them in games, the graphic novel was it was unlike JLA Avengers, where I had to start the whole book from scratch. And I really couldn't replicate my style from 20 years before that to match the new Avengers pages. The Titans, I found my niche. It was not that hard to draw the Titans so that it didn't look so noticeable that there was a 22-year gap between the first page and the last page. And it was nice going home, and it was nice that the reaction has been so good, and that, ironically, that ended up being the last book dealing with the old DC Universe before the new 52 titles came in. So it was a nice little salutation. Valedictory for the Titans and for the DC Universe, but obviously I'm not a good judge. Never expected that book to take off the way it did.
You mentioned a little bit about the JLA Avengers crossover. Could you talk a little bit about the first one and what happened?
Well, I mean, I don't want to delve into stuff, too much stuff that's been printed ad nauseum now. but it was just one of those situations where a lot of miscommunication was going on. Might have been a little bit of brinkmanship going on between two editorial staffs too. But I just wanted to draw it. I mean, they gave me the plot. As it turned out, the plot was not approved for both sides, which was a mistake, the first of many mistakes. But by the time I found out about it, I had drawn 21 pages of the story. And yes, there were a lot of flaws in that plot. There were plot holes you can drive, you know, armored tanks through. But as when I worked with Jim Shooter, whenever I've worked with any writer, okay, it's my job then to fill in those plot holes, make it work. And I was doing that as I went along. But again, since the plot was not approved, and this was, you know, one of those political hot potatoes, and, you know, Marvel and DC both have an equal stake in it, that caused a major snafu, wherein I think some disagreements were overblown. Certain things that were that could have been done, and any other title could have been handled with a, you know, simple phone call, a simple lunch. Just got out of hand. When one person felt slighted, it became overblown. Then suddenly decisions that might have been made with level head were being made with another person just waiting for the chip to be knocked off his shoulder. And so politics killed the first one, and I became very bitter about that. It was my JFK assassination as far as the comics industry when I realized that there were politics in comics as opposed to just enjoying doing the comics for the enjoyment of it. So I was very hurt by that, and at that point I blamed the editorship at Marvel, since I was working at DC at the time, and I stopped working at all for Marvel for a while, and it would be years and years before I would go back and work for Marvel again. And in hindsight, even I obviously reacted emotionally, but again, it was my baby. It was, you know, I wanted the JLA Avengers. That was the book. I didn't get to do the Titans X-Men. Because of another little political snafu that they wanted to get somebody who was working on the Marvel's side, and I was almost always working at DC, so they wanted a Marvel artist at the time. So that's why Walt Simonson, who did a wonderful job, got the Titans X-Men crossover, even though he was an artist who never drew either title at the time. So that they would give me JLA Avengers, since that would have been DC handling the actual publication, and I was working there. And so having it started and yanked away, yeah, that hurt. And a lot of fits and starts. They say, just going to resurrect it. Another writer came in and tried to use the 22 pages and create a, you know, a new plot, but they wouldn't approve that or whatever the story was. So I couldn't go any further than the 21 pages that were already drawn. And it lay there. After a while, they scrapped it. I sold the pages. Rob Liefeld bought the entire 21-page batch. And that was the end of it. I figured, you know, throughout the years, I would hear people saying, we'd like to resurrect it. And it died before anything close to a agreement or a plot could even be worked out. And there were three people, primarily, who were responsible for getting JLA Avengers back. One was Joe Quesada, because he took over the editorship over at Marvel and was saying, why wasn't this book ever done? And Joe and I have been friends for years. And I said, whatever political BS stopped this, what can we do to make it go away? You know, let's forget about anything in the past. Let's talk about this seriously. Tom Brevoort over at Marvel was also another person who also was championing it. Well, everyone at DC at that point was always championing it, because they were the ones initially going to be responsible for publishing it, and the money involved would have been great. So it was always at the Marvel side at that point. And ironically, the person who really made them, you know, either make a decision or scrap it was Mark Alessi of CrossGen Comics. Because Mark wanted me to join the staff of CrossGen Comics, and I said, really, I don't want to lose doing the JLA Avengers. And he basically said, well, give them this deadline. If they don't give you a contract saying, yes, we're going to do the JLA Avengers, then you say, well, then goodbye, and you come and work for us on staff. And the last day of the deadline, I was faxed. Remember faxing? the agreement, the terms by Marvel and DC to produce JLA Avengers. And so Mark Alessio pretty much, he obviously still wanted me so much at CrossGen that he said, okay, then why don't I put you still on staff at CrossGen but give you a leave of absence so you can do JLA Avengers. So I ended up getting everything. I didn't lose a thing on the agreement. Not the first time that ever happened. I'm very flattered. So, but because of the fact that I had some place to go, if JLA Avengers was not finalized, it forced Marvel and DC to say, okay, it can't. We have a deadline. We have to come to terms here if we want George, because it was pretty much agreed. If I wasn't drawing it, the book was dead. I was the reason they wanted the book done. And that's when JLA Avengers was finally greenlit. And obviously, in that case, the rest is history. It ended up being a fanboy dream come true. And with Kurt Busiek doing a story where I got to draw everybody at every era of JLA Avengers, including that cover where I draw everybody who ever been a member, never realized how many there were until I drew the cover of issue 3. It was, again, a wonderful, wonderful treat. And again, it's like so many titles. I didn't think it was going to go. And the fact that it was a 4-issue miniseries of 48 pages. The original one was only going to be one 64-page book. I had a lot of pages to draw, and I was inking everyone. And as some of you may know, I ended up in a carpal glove after doing the cover of issue number 3 because I'm drawing like this, because it's bigger than my board. So I'm drawing like this and really put stress on my arm. But even with that, the first 3 issues came out on time, and I only lost, I believe they said, 2 months in the 4th issue, and that because I was drawing it injured. I felt really bad about that until Tom Brevoort said, hey, be proud. You got 3 issues of that book getting on time, and you have very good reason to get that 4th issue late. We have people who are running further behind on their titles, and they don't have the excuse of an injury. But I was drawing with a carpal glove on when I was drawing the last issue of JLA Avengers, because I was not going to give up anything. And no, I didn't want an anchor helping me with backgrounds. I didn't want anyone helping me out on the actual drawing of the book. This was mine. If they had to print the last issue to put it on my gravestone, it was going to be done by me, you know?
But then just to plug, too, the Absolute JLA versus Avengers has a special compendium that reprints the 21 issues of the original series.
Yes, I wish they had some better. We had better Xerox copies of those, but there was, again, strange politics there. They didn't want to pay anyone or call someone who had the access to the original. So they could have had even better reproduction. But again, politics is very strange. They said, no, we don't want to have to either pay for it or deal with it. We'll have to give them credit because it's our characters. Legalese. But even there, they could have had a compendium for how they produced a compendium. It's always a very strange what the behind-the-scenes stories are.
In the mid-90s, with Marv Wolfman, you really shook up the DC Universe with Crisis on Infinite Earths. Was it daunting to work on such a big crossover book, especially, I guess, with all the deaths? And I guess some of them must have been surprises to you as well as you read the scripts?
The only thing that was daunting was the fact that I even considered somebody else to draw it before they came to me. I don't remember who the person was that they were talking about. The reason they didn't is they didn't think I want to do it. What? I mean, was I a stranger coming off the street? Come on now. When I found out about a book that I get to draw everybody in the DC universe, I mean, they were talking about major things they were going to do, but of course, none of them had been okayed yet. The idea of killing off the Flash that was talked about, whether they were do that, cleaning up the Superman line, which meant getting rid of a lot of the Superman knockoffs, including Supergirl. Who would have thought they'd do that? Hey, they were talking about killing Superman, too, at one point, to start him over. Actually killing the Golden Age Superman, which, of course, they would do later because, hey, obviously reverence was not something that's passed on from generation to generation, I guess. But, I volunteered for that one. Come on, I had my fingerprints all over it before I touched it. And, of course, when I got on it, if Marv would write a scene with a couple of characters in, they said, okay, now what other characters can I sneak into that same scene? For me, it was a once-in-a-lifetime. How many times did I get to draw the Metal Men, who were childhood friends, childhood favorites of mine, even though I read the stories now and said, ooh, God, are they silly. But they were fun. Metamorpho, Space Ranger. I mean, all these characters. When else was I going to get to draw the Dolphin? Come on. But it was, again, another dream come true. I've been very lucky. I mean, I've had a lot of dreams come true from a fanboy perspective. JLA Avengers. Finally getting to draw the Legion of Superheroes after so many years, since it was one of my favorite books in 30 years in the industry, and I had never drawn an actual Legion story. So now that was now written off my bucket list, as it were. That now, as far as what is my bucket list, the writers are now the ones that have to decide what my bucket list is, because now it's my job to make their dream come true, because pretty much all mine have been. Everything I wanted to do as a fan, I've gotten to do. What a great thrill. But since I don't intend to be passing away anytime soon, my wife has given me orders, I've got to find other avenues. So I leave it to the writers to say, ooh, we'd love George Perez to work on this. Let's give him a call. And it's still very nice after all these years to still be the pretty girl at the prom and constantly getting all these beaux coming in and, you know, offering me the next dance. And it's very gratifying because, again, and as you mentioned in the introduction with Marv, I know a lot of artists in my generation, older and even some younger, who sometimes bemoan that they don't get enough work or they're not offered diplomatic assignments. And I am of the feeling that I love what I do. I try to show on the page how much love I have for what I do. I mean, when you see that extra detail, when you see all the extra the panels or the extra characters that are drawn in, the guy's got to really love what he does. But that extra work, because I can do a lot less and still be paid the same amount of money for the page. And with my reputation, get away with it. But then I'd be living on a reputation, not on being synonymous with the master gunfighter in the old Western movie, and the young gunfighter who comes in just to prove that he's faster or deadlier than the old guy. I've always got to be aware that there's always that young buck who thinks that they're faster on the draw, both literally and figuratively there. And I've got to keep it honed. And the fact that I've been offered jobs in animation, I've been offered jobs in advertising. I love drawing comics. That's what I do. It's what I've obviously always wanted to do, and that's what I still want to do. I want to, you know, continue doing it. And the fact that a lot of the writers out there obviously grew up with my work. As I say, the liver spots pop out of my hand every time I say that. And they want to work with me. They, you know, it's in part they want to like rekindle their youth, you know, working with the person who they grew up with. But the fact that I try to still be vital, you know, I don't want to look bored with what I do. And I think for those who bemoan that the industry seems to be passing them by, I think it's because you kind of let it sometimes. You know, you don't try to, you know, not necessarily change your style to become the newest flavor of the week, flavor of the month, or whatever, but the fact that show that you are enthusiastic, show that you're willing to go that extra extra mile there. So that, because comics are expensive, and if you don't look like you're enthused with your work, you can't expect the fans to be enthused about your work. You know, you have to be able to show the fans this is exciting, enjoy it with me, and that's what I try to do.
Yeah, because you've been successful throughout your whole career reinventing yourself. And I think a few years after Crisis, you took on some writing with Wonder Woman. And what made you decide to write?
Well, actually, I had a story in mind for Wonder Woman, which was my variation on a Thor story that I enjoyed immensely when I was growing up, the Trial of the Gods, where Thor and Loki were put through a gauntlet in order to win, I forgot the prize, some kind of favor of Odin's. And I just thought it was wonderful. And I had seen what Walt Simonson was doing currently with Thor at the time. And I thought, here we have a mythological character in Wonder Woman, and kind of, you know, they're just basically treating her like a distaff Superman. There's much more to her. And after originally I wanted to do a Challenge of the Gods story, heavily inspired by the movies of Ray Harryhausen. I love those. And I thought, wow, imagine doing a Wonder Woman story with that type of feel, that type of magic. And I wanted to do it in its regular run, but then Crisis on Infinite Earth came, Wonder Woman was devolved, they were going to start her from point one. And I came into the office, at this point, John Byrne was already being attached to Superman. Frank Miller was already doing some amazing work on Dark Knight, and he and David Mazzucchelli were doing Batman Year One. And Wonder Woman, they had a story being set up for Wonder Woman that, without exception, every single woman, including the editor of the title at the time, hated. And I said, that's really trouble when your top female character is looked down upon by the female staff producing the book. Something was obviously wrong, and I read it, and I can certainly understand why. So I came in, and I really wanted to do that my great Harryhausen style story. So I volunteered, what if I come in and work on trying to, you know, do Wonder Woman for the first, 6 months. Again, 6 months, magic number. I was leaving 6 months, it seems. First time I ever was kissed by an editor. I also got kissed by Dick Giordano, too. It was amazing. But because of the fact that I had just come up with Crisis on Infinite Earth, I pretty much had my choice of any book I could possibly have wanted. The fact that I chose Wonder Woman, and they said the first artist of my stature ever to volunteer to draw Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was a book that was assigned to people. It was not a book that anyone ever took on. And I wanted it. I said, let me see what I could do. First thing I did was obviously met with the writer at the time, because they had an artist who did it. It would have been basically Penthouse magazine printing Wonder Woman. Which I said, okay, might appeal to a certain group, but it's not the type of book that DC could comfortably then spin Wonder Woman off of. She's going to be, you know, a character that women might feel insulted by. And they might have a little trouble getting out of the stands. So I said, let me try. I'll take the essence of Wonder Woman and try to clean it up. And one of the things which people didn't realize, as much as I love doing the characters, I never read the Moulton 1940s Wonder Woman books. I knew of them, I knew the basics of them, but I didn't read them. So I wasn't tied to the nostalgia of them. But I didn't want to, you know, throw the baby out with bathwater. But there were certain things I thought that had to clean up and hopefully make sense for a more modern sensibility, you know, for better or for ill. And again, it was after two issues, when the writer realized that anytime I made a suggestion, the editorship, at this point it was Karen Berger as my editor, always sided with me because I seemed to have the slant towards the character that they wanted, that the women wanted, and that the company wanted. And then I just took it on, and then eventually went on to actually scripting the book. Len Wein came into dialogue because they didn't think I was ready as a writer. And I give a lot of credit to Karen Berger as an editor, that despite the fact I could have bulldozed my way as, hey, well, I'm George Perez, I want to write this book. She thought I was not ready as a writer because I wasn't tried as a writer. I was tried as a plotter. So she thought that Len Wein might be a good buffer there, get an experienced scripter there. And even when I did my first issue 17, those first 10 pages, she had me totally rewrite. She said, no, you're over-wordy, you're describing the stuff you yourself are drawing, you know, the things that you shouldn't be doing. And again, that's what a good editor does. She made me a better writer that way. And obviously I fell in love with doing the character, and unfortunately, as it happens with me, after 2 years, I'm not fast enough to pencil an entire book with that kind of research. So I had to give up the penciling and stayed out of the writing. And a lot of people thought, and I agree with them, kind of lost a little something. I think the artist we chose, based on his portfolio, seemed right, but in hindsight, might have been a little too harsh an artist for Wonder Woman. She kind of lost a bit of that natural beauty that she's supposed to have. And others who came in, you know, I was writing plots that George Perez would draw. That's a suicide mission for most other artists. So, of course, I know that a lot of artists had trouble working with my plots because I was writing it for myself and putting them in situations where they had to write, you know, these dense plots that they weren't quite used to. And they did the best they could. But there was never the same type of, obviously, natural cohesion to the styles when I was writing my own book. Yes. But one of the things I heard one artist, writer, say that, oh, I'll never write something that I can't draw. I said, God, you could stagnate it. You know, I want George Perez, the artist, to curse George Perez, the writer, for what he does. Because I tell you, no, I only grow when I am forced to draw something that gets past my comfort level, because that's the only way you get better. So, yes, I would end up writing stuff that, oh, my God, this looks great. Draw all these characters. That's fantastic. Oh, my God, they're going to appear in the next page, and next page, and next page. So I've created Frankenstein. They have to continue on in the story. It's not an illustration. It's a story. And sometimes, yes, I would even curse myself out now. And I tell that to writers who, when they give me plots now, like when Jeff Johns gave me his, the Legion of Three Worlds. He wrote it in full script, and it was the most monstrously dense plot I've ever seen, with all these things described. And what I realized what Jeff was doing was he took a George Perez page that he grew up with, like The Crisis, and then broke it down to its essentials. And damn it, that's what it would look like if it was written out. But I told him, well, you shouldn't do that, because then you have nothing for George Perez to do, because you're doing it all for me. But yes, I can imagine how intimidating it is to try to replicate a George Perez book, because, when Marv gave me a plot, or even when he gave me a cover suggestion, the cover, Crisis number 5, which had 96 heads on it, Marv described it with 3. I just couldn't decide which 3. So I just kept adding more. No, I don't want to leave that person. I'll leave that person. So I just added on it. But my wife, I said, please, Marv, give him a cover. It'll be easy for him to draw. And you know, Marv said, I tried. He won't do it. But again, I love that. And Wonder Woman was, a book that, like the Titans, which no one expected to succeed, Wonder Woman was a book that no one expected to succeed. The fact that she is still a viable character, and an important character, even though they've gone away from what I've done, they obviously with the New 52 they've abandoned everything that I've done. There was a point where they were wondering, is it worth still printing Wonder Woman? And I'm proud to say I made Wonder Woman successful. She had the most successful one in decades when I was doing it, and because of the fact that I knocked my little tail off. The research on the Greek stuff, the M.C. Escher, Olympus, all that stuff was just, I have to do my best work on this book, because that's what the challenge is. When I originally left the Teen Titans, I left the Teen Titans because the book was too successful. I was able to do less than my best work just to get the book out on deadline, and the book was still selling through the roof. And for me, that was a danger sign. Said, God, if I can get away with drawing less than my best work and earn a lot of money, financially I'll be fine. As an artist, I'm heading towards that very, very slippery slope there. And my wife sometimes wondered, are you afraid of success? But I'm also afraid of stagnating. I've seen that happen in the industry. I've seen that, yes, you know, I've been in this industry now for 37 years, and I'm still working. I'm still popular in the industry. And that's because I have to always be aware that I can be replaced. I'm not irreplaceable, but I have to prove myself valuable. I have to, you know, even though I can't draw as fast, I can't stay on a monthly title. I have eye surgeries that I have to go back to take care of problems I have in my vision. So yes, I have certain limitations, but I still love what I do. So you know, I'll work through it as much as I can.
Jumping ahead about 10 years after Wonder Woman, you went back to the Avengers with Kurt Busiek. And how was that like, returning to the Avengers and your experiences on Wonder Woman? How did that change you?
Well, when I went on the Avengers, obviously, when I went on the Avengers, it was after the experimental Heroes Reborn, where they got most of the artists from the Image books to do new takes on four of Marvel's core titles. But in the case of particularly like the Avengers, the books were selling very well, but they were costing a fortune because of late fees and everything else. They were falling behind deadline. So it was an experiment that wasn't working. It just the only persons who were benefiting from it were the dealers and the people buying the books, because yes, they were buying it, but it was costing a fortune to produce the book. They were losing money on those books because it was just taking too long, you know. And you have to have a certain number of titles printed every given year to satisfy the fiscal responsibilities to your corporate heads. So, I had received a call from editor Ralph Macchio about writing, and that they said Rob Liefeld's going to be leaving the Avengers. We're talking about getting the characters back to where they were before that, and we'd like you to, based on my Wonder Woman run, to write and draw the Avengers. And I basically told Ralph, yeah, I think I need something to get my, because at that point I had left Wonder Woman. I was doing some stuff for smaller press, and I had pretty much started to see my career decline, primarily because I kept starting projects I couldn't finish. I was starting to be unreliable, and I needed something to prove to a new generation of people that, you know, why I had a reputation to begin with, because yes, I was seeing it vanish. So I said, yeah, maybe it's time for me to start penciling a regular book, to work really hard to stay on a monthly title. The Avengers sounds great. Unfortunately, I have not read the Avengers in many years. The learning curve to try to get on as a writer is something I cannot handle. So I suggested two writers, either Mark Waid or Kurt Busiek. And for whatever reason, Mark couldn't do it, and Kurt did. And so Kurt was responsible for, okay, you've got me as an artist. And Kurt's first question, okay, now which characters do you want to draw? And I said, well, everyone. let's knock it out of the park as much as we can on the first few issues. I'm not afraid. I need to resuscitate my career. And they were laying odds that I would not last six issues. That I'd be the first person to have a fill-in put in out of all the four artists involved in the Heroes Return series. So I ended up, saying, no. I knew I wanted to rebuild my career. I mean, there were retailers who, because of the fact that the Image artists were so popular at the time, were saying, well, that's going to make the books plummet if an old-style artist like George Perez takes over. And again, I didn't begrudge them that. That became the challenge. And even industry insiders were, betting again that I was not going to last I was going to be one of the first to fall. By the time the first year of Heroes Return was over, I was the only artist still there on the book that I started. I was the only artist who didn't miss a single issue, including doing two double-sized issues of which I drew every page and didn't have another artist filling in on the extra pages. I did everything on that book. Didn't miss a deadline, and the book remained in the top 10 or top 5 the entire time I was on that series. So, and Mark Waid, who freely admitted that he was one of the guys who voted, he said, I lost money on you, George, because they didn't think I would do it. I was determined. And it was Mark Waid who said, not since Jack Kirby had he seen someone with a John Travolta career who had a really hot Saturday Night Fever and then Grease, big success, and then Two of a Kind and all those other films, and until Pulp Fiction and other films catapulted him back up to the limelight. I had a John Travolta career. But this time I was old enough to appreciate and not have the younger hubris of thinking that I can get by. The industry will always have room for me. The industry will have room for me, but I got to prove that I'm valuable to the industry. And I was being recognized as the Orson Welles of comics. Basically, they didn't deny my genius, but they wouldn't rely on me to produce a movie, or in my case, a comic, because I was not reliable to them. I was blackballed at DC for a while because they wouldn't trust me. Back when I inked the Teen Titans on Dan Jurgens, Dan Jurgens and Eddie Berganza had to champion me. DC was very reluctant to have me ink that book because they didn't think I could stay on the title. And I stayed on 15 issues straight because I had to prove myself. And again, I like it and I respect editors who don't baby or coddle to the superstar talent. I don't think any one of us gets so big in this industry that we can afford to be complacent, that we can afford to be arrogant, and that we can prove to be unreliable. I don't think it serves the industry that we love so much if we don't have the respect for what we do enough to respect the fans who have to buy the darn books, and especially the expense of the books. So, and whenever I'm to blame, like when I was blackballed, I didn't blame the editors for blackballing me. No, they had the perfect right. I was screwing them left and right. They were also the first person to congratulate me when I got my career back in shape because, of course, they wanted me to produce the books. I was the one screwing up. So I needed to take care of it. And even now that I'm nowhere near as prolific and sometimes do fall behind because, unfortunately, I now have physical limitations that I'm fighting, I don't want them to use euphemisms. Saying like we're rescheduling books or we're going in a different direction. No, if I screwed up, I admit I screwed up. If I can't maintain the title because I have vision problems or just lost interest in the title, let the fans know that privately. Don't put it out. Obviously, I know they don't want to advertise that, but I'm also not going to go on and do an interview and do a company line about it and saying, oh no, they changed direction. No, if I screwed up, I'll admit it. If they screwed up, they know I'll admit that too. That's why I don't do interviews anymore. Because of the fact that, maybe it's maybe kind of old-fashioned. I don't think lying really helped, and spin can only go so far, because we are now in the digital age where, let's face it, you fans are the most cynical group of readers we could ever hope to nurture. And we created this Frankenstein known as fandom, so we have to live when the villagers start coming and revolting with the fire and pitchforks. But again, for me anyway, it keeps me honest, and it keeps me just, you know, trying to prove myself. You know, when Brave and the Bold came out, I was disappointed that it didn't sell well. We tried our best on that, but can I blame the fans? You know, you can't force anyone to buy anything. I was proud of the book. Mark Waid was proud of the book. It didn't sell well. Probably maybe it was old-fashioned in this day and age. You know, in this market, there's a certain... We created a continuity-minded fandom. And when you do stuff that's a little too retro, that can be a double-edged sword. I mean, it's successfully drawn, but not successfully selling. And now, of course, now they're trying to, the New 52 to try to address that. And we'll see how that succeeds. You know, I never thought I'd be in a situation in my entire career where I needed reference to draw Superman. I can't make out those seams on the darn costume. It doesn't make sense front and back. But again, it's like, well, the fact that I was approached about doing Superman on the New 52, so even though I am a veteran of closing in on four decades, I'm still the pretty girl at the prom. They want me involved in the new directions. They don't want me to be the nostalgia person the entire time. So, and you know, I'll try my best. I didn't enjoy Superman. That's why I'm not on that book anymore, because it was like a bit too much committee comics right now. So like, I'll be glad to draw for a while. So now, after doing so many team books, obviously not counting Superman, because I was a writer. I was doing a fill-in, which I still not finished, but they couldn't make up their minds on the plot for Birds of Prey. I did a fill-in issue of Supergirl, and now I'm being asked to do World's Finest with The Huntress and Power Girl. So if I'm going from a book, from an artist who was always asked to do the team books, to an artist who being asked to do the books that have the babes in it, what a way for a man to go from artist to dirty old man. It's a perfect transition.
So I'd like to open the floor to some questions now.
Yes.
I thought your run on Wonder Woman was the best run on that title in its history. I thought it was fantastic. It was also my sister's favorite title of her comic reading life. And the recent attempt of making Wonder Woman a television series was obviously a failure. And I think the reason it was a failure is because it didn't have consulting editor George Perez attached to that, because you brought the mythology back to Wonder Woman, and I hope they do that in the future.
Well, one of the things that you say about it, they actually were considering a television of another television series of Wonder Woman years and years when I was still on the book, and they actually had me come into a meeting. By the time I left the meeting, I told Jeanette Kahn, who was paying me a per diem for being there, don't you ever invite me to one of these meetings again, because the fact that I didn't really like going in as a consultant on any project wherein the other people there who don't read comics think they know the industry better than we do. And I said, no, I have no desire to be involved. I don't own the character. If I owned it, yes, I'd have a lot more say. But Wonder Woman belongs to DC Comics, or obviously to the Moulton Estate, Charles Moulton Estate. So I was wary about it. But I understand, I have a lot of friends in Hollywood. And I know how much compromise is being made. You know, everything is by committee, which is why I'm a little leery about 52, because everything's by committee. And I just don't like working by committee. You know, I don't think you get as creative as you can be, and my ego won't do it. I mean, it's very, very ego-boosting. I have an utter respect for people who can work in that kind of industry. Me, I like to draw. I like to have, you know, my little world that I can play in. And let them. I mean, when I saw the Wonder Woman, the stuff that they were doing for the Wonder Woman series that David Kelley was putting together, everyone was asking me what my opinion was. A, I'd never seen it, so I have no opinion, and I wouldn't give my opinion because I am George Perez, who worked on Wonder Woman. And anything I would say, even a side remark, would be given much more weight than it deserves to have. I mean, I'm not any more of a or less important in my opinion about these things than anyone else is. You know, I'm a fan. And if they're going to be doing Wonder Woman, they're going to be doing Wonder Woman. If they're doing it as the same way I did it, fantastic. They did it a different way. I have no choice on that. But if I made any comment about it, people would say, you know, George Perez thinks it sucks. Or George Perez actually licensed this thing. Oh, you know, but, you know. And so I, during the entire time, I refused to say anything about it because who am I to put any more weight in my words than anyone else? And if people didn't like it, nothing I'm going to say is going to change their minds. If people liked it, nothing's going to change their minds either. Just because I say it, and people, you know, say, you know, well, you should listen, because, you know, it's been branded or damned by George Perez, would have been unfair. Not to mention the fact that, like, you know, for those people working on Wonder Woman, that's an unfair thing to do. Particularly since, like a lot of, even a lot of fan reaction, they're reacting to what they little that they saw, not the finished product. And they're asking me to do the same thing.
There was a Green Lantern over there that had a question.
Mm-hmm. I can't hear. Well, over at my table, I've been doing sketches there, so that's the place to find me. In fact, the very first sketch I had to draw at this convention was Hal Jordan.
Right next to the Green Lantern?
I have not read a comic book in probably a couple of decades now. I find, in fact, Dan DeDio used to have this whole thing when he had panels of his creators on there. Said, "Okay, now what books are you reading? Which of the comics are you reading now?" And I always tell Dan, "Don't do it. Don't like Dan. I don't read comics anymore. I work on them a lot of hours. I don't even read the. I haven't read a single issue of Superman that came out because whatever they change, I don't want to know about it anyway. the thing is, for me." And it's not that I love to draw, but I've been doing this a long time. And as an artist, I don't really have to as much as a writer. As a writer, I have to read the comics, but obviously you have to keep tabs on what the characters are doing. But for me, it's like, when I'm not drawing comics, I like to have a different type of social life. A, I've been married now going on 369 months on the 26th of this month. That's 30 years and 9 months, for the mathematicians around here. And I like to spend the time with my wife. My wife is a belly dancer, so I like to go and support her and on her endeavors. I have a lot of friends. I'm involved in my community theater, and I like to be away from my drawing board. Even though my community theater, what am I doing? I'm drawing posters for them, or I'm acting on stage. But you know, I've stopped reading it, not because I love them. It's just that it's too big for me now. I mean, hey. You guys must be millionaires to be able to read comics. I tell you. And the fact that it has changed a good deal. If I were to jump in now, these characters would be strangers, you know, that they've been recast. I mean, it's like, you know, my God, Daniel Craig? I thought it was Sean Connery last time I left here. So the thing is, I respect those who do continuity, but for me, it's my job now, and I love my job, but I guess also I don't read it because then I'd be involved in the politics that's going on right now, too, and that's another thing I have to avoid.
Go ahead. I think there was a question right here.
Yeah. I know, like, Frank Miller's crossed over a little bit into, like, the film world. I was wondering if you've ever been approached or if there's anything that you would like to, like, do in the film world, either, like, your own creation or characters you'd like to see develop into a film.
Well, actually, as far as film work, I have some friends who are doing indie films. One of them, they're having, it's on Facebook, Relatively Super, which is a bit of a part satire, part social commentary on superhero, particularly the sidekick or the legacy type characters. And they're having me design the characters, and they're giving me a co-producer credit because I'm designing all their characters for them, including suggesting things that you can do with a comic book character that, because I'm the comic book guy, they're asking my advice. They're actually asking my advice. And very flattering that there are some professionals being attacked. I think they're going to try doing a motion comic first to try to, you know, do a little promo on the characters, get the characters out there. I think Michael Dorn may be one of our voice actors. So I'm involved in that type of film work, and I did a poster for a very low budget sword and sorcery type movie called Legend of the Red Reaper. that's produced in California by a young woman named Tara Cardinal, who plays the lead role. I did the design for the poster art there, and I make a cameo. She has a character called Pere, P-E-R-E. You know, no Z, that we leave that to you guys to fall asleep on. So I was very flattered. But, and the thing is, that's about it. Because like, as far as doing really mainstream, I commend people like you mentioned, Frank Miller, who want to do that. That's never been my aspiration. My aspiration is to do comics. So I frankly, doing that, the stuff I am doing, because it's below the radar enough that I can enjoy it. And it doesn't really require to do much more than what I ordinarily do, draw comics. In doing a motion comic, somebody else is doing the layout, because I have no idea how to do a motion comic. I can draw it, but I don't know what they actually need. So somebody else will be handling that. So stay tuned for that someday. But, you know, that's about it. I mean, like, I don't have the intestinal fortitude to be a Hollywood player. I remember when Image was started, and they said they were going to be tying into a lot of the Hollywood people, that we have connections. Worst thing they could have told me. I said, no, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to be drawing storyboards for a movie. I want to be drawing a comic book. If they decide to take a successful comic book and make it into a movie, more power to them. But I don't want to be taking on an assignment with Hollywood in mind. No, I want to go into an assignment because it'll make a damn fine comic book. At least fine, as best as I can do. If anything that happens beyond that, fine. The Titans cartoon, even though they obviously took a lot of liberties with it, fantastic. But it would never have happened if the Titans was not a successful comic book first and foremost. And even though, yes, when they first showed me the cartoon, I would say visually it was so different that I really couldn't get into it. When I got that royalty check on the Titans cartoons, and saw young children reacting to me as the co-creator of the Teen Titans, even though, you know, obviously they're seeing a totally different version of the Teen Titans, then I realized, oh, this is a whole new audience falling in love with characters that Marv and I created. And if I hadn't said yes to that assignment at the time, that wouldn't have happened. But I didn't go on designing the cartoon or go on to the Teen Titans because, oh, this will make a great cartoon. No, let me just do the best comic I can.
Okay, I've been given my warning, so we got one more question.
Okay, you choose.
Green Lantern.
Oh, there's so many Green Lanterns.
I got the whole core
here. I know.
Well, brief aside before I ask my question, I actually met up with you on at the Friday premiere party.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and I couldn't hear a word.
Oh, I couldn't hear anybody either.
Okay. My question was, for the New 52, since we were talking about not getting too referential artistically and doing written work, how do you actually see the new designs? Is it like intimidating, like to actually get take too much time as opposed to...
The only thing that bothers me about the New 52 as far as the new designs is that too many of them are designed by the same people. And I really am bothered by the fact that they don't have the artist who actually drawing the books dating to design it. Again, corporate is what's being done now with the books. And things are being second-guessed left and right. There's a case of too many chiefs and not enough Indians now. And whether it'll work, you know, who am I to say? I mean, I think they want it to be like Hollywood, and it's becoming like Hollywood, even in producing comics, in which you have, you know, a corporate room deciding where things are going to go. And part of the reason for me leaving Superman was I had certain ideas I wanted to do, and unfortunately, stuff that they okayed one day, they would change their mind the next day, and it was becoming way too difficult, and was slowing us down. That's unfortunate. I hope it succeeds for the industry's sake. I hope it does succeed. But I found that in the case of Superman, they didn't want a writer; they wanted a typewriter. Particularly since now they also have to, particularly in Superman, they have to deal with the people producing the movie, who also had a say in what's going on in the comic as well. Again, the fear, my one fear: I'm not producing a comic; I'm producing a storyboard for a movie. So that's not what I wanted to do. So I decided to bow out. I'll stay on as penciler where I have fewer headaches. Not no headaches, but fewer headaches. Because in doing World's Finest, everything's, again, still being decided at the last minute, a lot of decisions. they needed a design for the Supergirl character, yet they didn't ask me to design the Power Girl character. So, okay, they finally gave me a design. They needed to get it out for solicitations. Got it drawn, got it in time, got it colored, got it printed into solicitations. And then they called me up a week later after designing the second cover. Oh, we changed our mind in the Power Girl costume, which means now I have to do a patch on the first issue cover. And from a practical financial point of view, I just lost the resale value of my artwork because now the character is not the same character that appears on the cover. And they screwed me out of that. And I shouldn't be thinking of that, but you guys really have to make up your minds. This is getting... when an artist like Dan Jurgens, for those who don't know, Dan Jurgens is one of the fastest, most professional artists in the industry. When I was working with him on Teen Titans, he was always 3 months ahead of schedule. I was having a hell of a time keeping up with him. On Green Arrow, he was basically trying just to make the deadline and not be late, because every time they kept changing their minds on the stories. And I don't know if that's improved yet, but again, in the case of Superman, I didn't want to wait around anymore. I needed to get away. It was just not conducive. I didn't want to end up hating working on a book. And I'm hoping that Keith Giffen has a better time on it than I did. And the one of the things, at least I am proud of, I got a good response to my Superman story, which at least, okay, what was left in there, people did enjoy. And that's still very gratifying, and I have not read them, because again, I don't know what you guys are praising me for is the stuff I actually wrote. All I know, the editors have rewritten stuff and they're praising it to the nines, and it's like selling your house to somebody, then going back and visiting. It's like, wow, you hate it because they're tacky, they changed all the furniture, but you hate it even more because their tastes are better than yours. Thank you. I think that's it.
Yes. Well, big thanks, George.